Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to our second podcast. We have labeled it Scrambled Eggs. We'll get to that in a minute, but I am Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is on the line. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
It is good. We are talking Marquette basketball. And just a little history, if you didn't join us last week, why we have decided to call it Scrambled Eggs. It just goes to an Al McGuire expression. He used to say that he would have a second unit, an offense, that he called his Scrambled Eggs offense that would really just kind of go into the game to kind of mix things up when the team was struggling or whatnot, and he just needed a change of pace, and that was his Scrambled Eggs offense. And so that's the way we look at our podcast. We may not be the best, we may not be the stars, but we just want to contribute.
Well, I'll take whatever I can get.
I think Marquette probably could have used a Scrambled Eggs offense, or maybe just any kind of offense, as we break down the game from Saturday against Villanova. Not sure. I guess the first place to begin when talking about this game, we have to look at the turnovers. And that it was really just a sloppy performance on Marquette's part, and the turnovers are certainly what jump out. 19 turnovers in the game.
Well, you got to wonder, after 4 years, when Junior Cadugan's going to learn to dribble the ball a little bit lower. You also got to wonder when he's going to learn that they now know if he's dribbling with his left hand at the top of the key, he's crossing over and driving with his right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the book's out on Marquette, and I think this was actually the turnovers were terrible and really cost Marquette the game. I think it really had to do somewhat with matchups. So that's kind of the good news, bad news. The bad news was Nova was a bad matchup. They're long, they're athletic, and they were able to pressure way outside the three-point arc, and Marquette just couldn't generate offense from there. The good news is not everyone has the same athletes that Nova has. So depending on the matchups, Marquette could look night and day from how they looked yesterday.
Right, you know, and I hate to put it all on Junior Cadugan, because you know a lot of guys didn't contribute, but he was probably the most glaring one if you were watching the game. You look at the box score and you see, hey, 5 of 10, 12 points, but I mean he had like 5 of those kind of in garbage time, and really you look at the turnovers and you say, if you watch the game and you say, wow, he only had 5, because it seemed like he was involved in quite a few more.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't send more balls into the stands.
Right.
He only had the one that he threw 6 feet over Vander's head. That was, I would have expected more the way he kind of was distributing the ball yesterday.
Yeah, he certainly didn't have his best game, and you look at some of the other things that jump out at me from the game. Obviously, Vander Blue didn't have his best game. It seemed to me like when I was looking for Marquette to score, Vander wasn't on the court a lot, but I look at the box score and see he played 30 minutes, so I guess maybe that's a little less than what we're used to from Vander, but he did sit, I guess, more than I thought he would. He was 2 of 8 from the floor, only had 7 points, and Devontae Gardner, who I guess maybe it was just a game for him where it was just a bad matchup. They didn't like his chances down low against Nova's big guys, but still, he only played 11 minutes, and it's not like he was in a lot of foul trouble. He only had 2 personal fouls, but he also only had 2 points, and Marquette's not going to win too many games when Devontae Gardner only has 2 points.
Well, yeah, that was an aberration from Gardner. He had 2 critical missed free throws that didn't even look close, which we're not used to from Devontae. The other part of it was, going back to the extended defense from Villanova, I think they're just, Marquette didn't do a good job of feeding the post. They weren't getting angles to get entry passes, and Nova was really hedging hard on all the passes, and we couldn't seem to roll to the screener, which was Gardner usually, and couldn't get an entry pass to him. So it's everything just stayed out on the perimeter, and everything was kind of hectic, and it just didn't work out. And surprisingly, mentioning the box score, Cadugan had 32 minutes yesterday. I'm shocked by that. It felt like he was in and out a lot more and really should have generated more offense than he did.
Yeah, I think the concern for Buzz is he wasn't getting enough offense, and that's why we didn't see Derek Wilson more, because I think Derek Wilson is a guy, you think he's not going to lose you any games, but he's probably not going to win you many games because he doesn't score a lot. I mean, he's a guy, if you get 4 points from him, you think that's a good night from him. You just kind of rely on him to take care of the ball. He doesn't turn it over very much. He was the only guy who played, Gardner didn't have a turnover either, but other than that, Wilson was the only other guy who played who didn't have a turnover, although he only played 8 minutes. But I guess he just felt he needed Junior Cadugan to play and hopefully just get it together if he would stop turning the ball over, and that's why I guess Cadugan continued to play in the game. When you look at losing to Villanova on the road, as far as NCAA tournament resume, it's not a bad loss, quote unquote. But when you're talking Big East championship, it's, you know, when you consider what we thought about this team after the Green Bay loss, it seems crazy to talk about Big East championship. But as far as a Big East championship is concerned, that was a crushing loss because that's all but out the window now.
Well, yeah, at this point, fate is out of our hands, right? Where we don't control our own destiny.
Right.
We have to essentially win out, and then we have to hope Syracuse comes back and beats Georgetown at Georgetown, and some other pieces fall into place. And
right, we also need Louisville to lose a game somewhere.
Yeah, and it was just a frustrating game. Even the little things when Villanova went into a full-court press, how with all the ball handlers we have, how are we not able to break a press just routinely?
That surprised me, too. It seems like we got lost in the press a lot. Why do I say we so much? Like I'm part of the team. I guess it's just a reflex. I think saying we is okay if it's your school, but regardless. Marquette really struggled against the press. Like you said, it does shock me because when you have guys like Cadogan and Blue and Mayo and Derek Wilson out there, you would think they could be able to get. And even Gardner, who can. I guess he can't maybe dribble it that much. But, I mean, you think you would have guys that could come out there and help. Like Jamil Wilson is a guy I think you could trust to touch the ball a little bit and help you break the press.
Well, and I think that's where the. You know, when we mentioned that we were shocked that Cadogan only had 5 turnovers. I think that's part of that is because on several of the attempted press breaks, Cadogan was feeding the ball to Blue or Mayo or Wilson in positions that actually generated turnovers.
Right, you know, Lockett had 4 turnovers.
Right.
Blue had 3.
And one or two of them, Cadogan hung him out to dry, you know,
right.
Kind of stopped the ball and chucked it over the top, and Villanova was waiting for it. So I think it's not just the directly attributable, it's the indirectly related turnovers that just killed us on those press breaks.
And that's the frustrating because Marquette did not shoot the ball that poorly. They didn't do well from 3. I mean, they were 3 of 12 from downtown, but overall they shot 45% in the game. They were 22 of 49 from the field, which is better than Villanova shot it. The problem was they just didn't get enough shots up, and they didn't get to the free throw line as much as they would want, because normally a key to success for Marquette is taking making more free throws than their opponents attempt, and that didn't happen. They were 9 of 14 from the free throw line. Villanova got to the line 25 times and made 18 of them.
Yeah, it just seemed like this was one of those games where, and I don't like advocating, you know, I don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, especially when it comes to Vander's game, because, you know, for some reason I love his game right now, but I feel like it's on a knife's edge of going one way or the other because it just seems so too good to be true. But with a game like that yesterday, with Junior struggling, Vander not really scoring anyway, I don't know why we didn't go a little bigger and actually have Vander running the point.
Half the time,
Vander was bringing it up anyway.
Yeah, I guess maybe the concern there is really it's not very often, and I'm trying to think of a time when Vander has been like the point guard, like he's been out there without either Cadogan or Derek Wilson. It's been pretty rare.
I agree, it's been rare.
I just don't think that was a time when Buzz said, "Hey, you know, let's try it right now," even though we never do it. And maybe that's something they try and, you know, look at in practice. Maybe it's too late in the season to kind of figure something like that out. I think you're kind of at the point where you know you have to have Cadogan or Derek Wilson out there at all times, and you'll just take them for all their flaws and just either A, hope Cadogan doesn't turn the ball over and that, you know, he's playing his best. Because when he, like, you know, not, I feel like we're ragging on Junior a lot, but when he's playing his best ball, he's really solid. Marquette is tough to beat when Cadogan is playing well. But, you know, when he's off, I mean, the whole offense is off. Because when Cadogan's off, the rest of the team, like you said, gets put in bad spots sometimes and turns the ball over. Devontae Gardner doesn't get the ball enough. I mean, he only had 4 field goal attempts in the game.
Right. Yeah, he went to the line the one time. I think that was it.
That's just one time, and he missed them both, right?
Yeah, missed them both, and that's very unusual. And, you know, and again, like you said, we shouldn't be ragging on Junior necessarily. The team does have, in general, have a tendency to make lazy passes. They almost get lulled into a false sense of security and just make lackadaisical passes, and they lead to turnovers going the other way. And it just seems weird for such an intense team that Buzz likes to put together.
Right. It was an uncharacteristic game. And I was talking, you know, like I said a minute ago, when we look back to after the UW Green Bay loss and what we thought about this team, we were probably wondering if, you know, Marquette was even going to make the tournament. But now they're obviously a tournament team. But I think now at least we have a good grasp of like what this team is. And the problem is they could be very Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, they have games like that Pittsburgh game at home where they're clicking on all cylinders. They don't turn the ball over very much. They're making really good passes, and they're getting the ball in the post, getting all those paint touches, and getting easy baskets, and getting the occasional good performance from downtown. And then they're also capable of games like Saturday when they do turn the ball over a lot, and maybe they don't get a great performance from downtown, and the shot selection isn't as good. I think at this point with Marquette, you know you're not going to get a game like Villanova every night. You're not going to get a game like Pittsburgh every night. You can just attribute that to home and road, but you know, like, you're not going to get. I don't see this team being a team that puts together 6-7. Solid performances in a row. They're going to have a letdown every now and then.
Well, to that point, how much would you attribute to home versus road? There seems to be a growing consensus that we're really good at home and very vulnerable on the road. Because even if you look at the first half of the Seton Hall game, that was a disaster waiting to happen.
It was.
You know, and then you get a 25-1 run in the second half. But, you know, is there something to the road?
Well, there has to be. I mean, you know, that's one of the long truths in really all college sports, college football and, you know, basketball. You know, teams just play better at home when their fans are cheering for them, whether in basketball, when they're shooting at a rim they're familiar at, the way the ball bounces, the backdrop, the lighting, all these little things have an effect on the shooters, on the intensity of the players, on their focus. I would say with some of these, you know, some of the guys, really all college basketball, maybe their focus just isn't there when the crowd is against them. And maybe, you know, they lose their confidence on the road, and that can have an effect on, you know, over the course of a game. You know, every four possessions, maybe you make a mistake that you wouldn't make at home. That adds up over the course of a game, and yeah, you're just going to lose a few more. But I get what you're saying, that it shouldn't be just that black and white, that we're great at home and we're terrible on the road. You'd think, because, you know, Marquette did play a great second half at Seton Hall. They played, granted, South Florida isn't very good, but they did play one of their, probably their most complete game of the season at South Florida.
Best compared to Pittsburgh.
Right. Yeah, I would guess it's definitely up there. I mean, they were start to finish, they were rock solid, didn't turn the ball over, shot the ball well. That was on the road. So, again, that wasn't their own rims or their own fans. But I think when you're playing in front of a hostile crowd, it does get in your head a little bit. And even when you're maybe when you have some younger players, the thing is, it was some of Marquette's seniors that really struggled in the game, particularly Cadogan. Lockett didn't have his best game. He had with four turnovers. And against some of the other upperclassmen, Gardner and Blue didn't have their best games.
The feel of that game. Now, I was watching the game without audio. I was at a party. I was the strange man standing in the corner silently screaming and diving on the floor every
day. It happens. You have to play that role sometimes.
What's that?
You have to play that role sometimes.
Yeah, so I didn't have any of the audio, but watching the game, it just felt like the game ultimately ended up being a 4-point loss. It felt like 4 points was 16 points. It did.
And the funny thing is, I when I watch a game, I definitely follow along on Twitter, and I like to kind of interact with a lot of other Marquette fans on Twitter. And when Villanova's lead got to 5 with 7.5 minutes left, people on Twitter saying it's over. And it seemed very pessimistic to say, but if you were watching the game and the flow of the game, it was really realistic that you said, well, there's 7.5 minutes left. They can make up 5 points, but they didn't. They couldn't. Because they couldn't get 3 stops in a row, and they couldn't get 3 buckets in a row. I think they used to call that was a turkey last year. I don't know if they still call them turkeys.
Yeah, but now they're looking for 2 perfect possessions where they don't want a shot up, or if the shot goes up, they want the defensive board. Shockingly, the lead even got out to 10 at one point with like 4 minutes back, 4 minutes left, and they managed to come back a little bit from that.
Right.
But it was just a weird game. And then even at the end, I think was a bit of a microcosm. When we were down, I want to say 6, we had, I think it was Jameel Wilson, then Vanderblue, then Todd Mayo, all had relatively clean looks at 3, passed it up to Junior, probably our worst shooting 3-point shooter, and he jacked it up and hit. it seems like feast or famine. Yes, Junior hit, so the result was good, but that's not the shot I wanted him to take.
Right. And you know, there are some little things you pick out in the game sometimes. I remember there was some point there in the second half, I forget what point it was, but like Chris Otule had like a dunk or a good layup on one end. He went on the other end, had a block shot, and then there was a chance to really kind of cut into the lead, and Jameel Wilson had a wide open three, and then like he threw it down low to Gardner, who wasn't looking, and it hit him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And really, and I know Marquette never got any closer after that. You know, sometimes you could just, you feel like in the game like that, like people kind of saying on Twitter, the team was playing so bad, so poorly, so many turnovers. Once they made a big mistake and Nova made just a tiny run, you just felt that they weren't going to come back from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a tough game. And, you know, I don't think this is, you know, depending on and what online media you're looking at, this is either the worst loss in Marquette history or,
false.
Or, you know, were on suicide watch. It was an opportunity missed, fully recoverable. Yes, to your earlier point, we're probably on the outside looking in for a Big East championship, which would be great because it's going to be one of the few that are left. Maybe one next year, but you know, we got to learn from it. Just makes Monday night's game that much more critical.
Well, let's talk about Monday night's game now with Syracuse. You know, this time a week ago we were anticipating, hoping that this would be a game to settle first place in the Big East outright. Obviously, that's not the case because two things that we thought might happen did not. We were kind of assuming that Syracuse would beat Georgetown. Georgetown got an amazing win up there at Syracuse, and Georgetown is now in first by themselves. And, of course, Marquette did not win at Villanova. So now, really, it's a battle for second place. And it's still critical because you look at these last four games, Marquette really has to win three out of four to have a shot at the double bye in the Big East tournament. Because I think if they lose two, they're going to get caught by, because Louisville's going to be ahead of them. Notre Dame's going to be ahead of them. There's still Connecticut back there. Maybe Pittsburgh could climb. Well, we have the tiebreaker against Pittsburgh, so I think that's kind of where it stops. But this game is critical because one game can change everything. Because Marquette goes out on Monday night and plays a great game and somehow beats Syracuse, then we all of a sudden, hey, we're back in the conference title mix, right? Because then we're just one game behind Georgetown. Georgetown has still a game against Syracuse to play, and still there's a chance of at least sharing the Big East title. So I think one good game could really, because I know we're all standing on the ledge right now after a bad game against Nova, but there's still hope if they can turn around and play well against Syracuse.
Well, and it helps, as we apparently just established, Marquette's great at home, and that beats everything. Mm-hmm. So having Syracuse at home certainly helps. I'm not sure, you know, Syracuse, I caught the tail end of the Syracuse game, again, being the lonely man in the corner at the party, and Syracuse didn't look good. They looked flat, which is surprising at home. You wonder how that, a quick turnaround from a home game where they kind of just fell flat. And
right, Syracuse I just thought Syracuse was uncharacteristically flat at home in what it was going to be Georgetown's last appearance at the Carrier Dome for the foreseeable future, maybe ever. I don't want to say ever because I think they'll eventually bury the hatchet and play again, but I was surprised how poorly Syracuse played.
Yeah, and so you wonder with the, you know, essentially a 48-hour turnaround, having to come into Milwaukee and really play for second place at this point. You know, both need to win to maintain hope for first place, but you don't know how that's going to react. We've got the advantage being at home, but it wasn't like we had a kickingly awesome time on Saturday ourselves. So I just don't know how those matchups are going to work. But I will say this. I think we'll have much better offense because Syracuse always plays the 2-3 zone. And yes, they're long, and yes, we sometimes struggle across against the 2-3. But I think for the most part, we've kind of figured it out. Where we really struggle is where the teams extend the defense and have quick guards, and I don't think that Syracuse necessarily has that. So I think we can attack the 2-3.
Right, and I think Syracuse has length is where they're going to frustrate Marquette because I mean you look at their one thing I think is good for Marquette is Syracuse is not very deep. They really only play seven guys. Now they're seven very talented guys. You know, I think certainly Syracuse's starting five has certainly more talent than Marquette's starting five. But you look at their length You know, Michael Carter Williams is 6'6", Grant is 6'8". You've got Christmas at 6'9". You know, Trish at the guard is 6'4". So I guess he's comparable to Junior, maybe a little bigger than Junior. And then, you know, James Sutherland coming off the bench is 6'8". But like you said, I think Marquette has done a little better against the zone, and it's not necessarily shooting either, because Marquette is still not a great three-point shooting team. They're not going to be this year at this point. But, you know, Vander can get hot, as can Todd Mayo, and knock down some outside shots. But the passing and reversing the ball and finding the gaps and finding a way to get it down low, ideally to Gardner, to get those and-one opportunities. Because if you can get their big guys in foul trouble, you know, get guys like Christmas and Fair in foul trouble, then you're getting deeper in their bench than Boeheim is comfortable going.
Right, and keep in mind, their big guys are all relatively young as well. Mm. So they've got some inexperience now. We're almost a full season in, so they're technically basically a year older. But I wouldn't be surprised. Sneaking suspicion, I think Steve Taylor is going to play a big role on Monday night. I think he's going to flash to that high post in the zone and either attack
and he can
the rack
do that,
or distribute to Gardner or Toole from there. I think he sees 15 minutes maybe and really makes an impact.
Yeah, I think he and Jamil Wilson could both be X factors, just kind of in the middle of that zone, like you said, open it up, whether it's knocking down a jumper or just making that extra pass to get it to one of the big guys for easy buckets. If Marquette's not hitting outside shots, I think it could get away from them in a hurry on Monday. The home court advantage is what makes me optimistic that Marquette can hang in. Not to sound too pessimistic, but I don't think I'm really stretching it by saying if this game was at Syracuse, I'd be afraid Marquette gets blown out by 20 points or more, because we've seen how they've played on the road against top quality teams. Florida was awful. Granted, that was they didn't have Todd Mayo for that game, I don't believe.
No.
And then, you know, the Louisville game was pretty bad. They didn't play very well at Georgetown just a couple weeks ago. But now, the good news is it's at home. They have played well at home. They beat Wisconsin at home. Granted, you know, Wisconsin didn't have their full roster that night, but still Marquette played very well at home against Wisconsin. They played great at home just last week against Pittsburgh. I mean, that was kind of the win that got us all excited and thinking we could win a Big East championship. So, you know, the crowd has to be loud. Syracuse has to play poorly again, and Marquette really has to regroup. My gut feeling is that that Syracuse is going to have a little too much for Marquette on Monday night, even though it is at home. But I'm not completely ruling out the fact that Marquette could put it together, a solid effort like we saw against Pittsburgh. And if Syracuse is off like they were at home, if they're still shell-shocked from losing at home to Georgetown, yes, I could see Marquette somehow pulling out a win.
See, I'm accused all the time of being overly optimistic, so we'll take this with a grain of salt. But I think this is going to be the first sellout of the Bradley Center all season. So I think the crowd's going to really be into this one. I think it's going to be the biggest game, even more so than the Pittsburgh game. It's going to be the biggest game that the team will have played in all season so far at home. I think the crowd really gets them amped. I think it's going to, and file this under the no kidding clause, but I think it's going to go one of two ways. Marquette's either going to come out real sharp and kind of bury Syracuse, or it's just going to be a tooth and nail biter with nobody really hitting any buckets.
A rock fight.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Syracuse is going to blow us out. I think we could have a pretty fairly decent lead against them, especially if we're hitting our shots. We just seem to shoot better at home. Maybe the glass on the backboard's a little less opaque or something. I don't know. But I have a fair amount of cautious optimism on this one.
You know, if I'm Boeheim, I know pressing isn't exactly Syracuse's style, but if I'm watching the tape from this weekend, I would be telling my guys, let's get in Cadugan's head, let's frustrate him, let's make him turn the ball over, and I think then Marquette loses the rest of his offense, and then Syracuse can pull away. That's what, if I'm Syracuse and watching tape from this weekend, or really, you know, some other past games that Marquette hasn't played well in, that's what I would take away, is Syracuse would want to frustrate Cadugan and kind of take him out of the game.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think fortunately, over Jim Boeheim's very extensive career, I think he's shown a propensity to want to do it his own way. So that, that kind of works out for us. Like I said, if it, you know, at the beginning of this podcast, Marquette, it's clearly at this point in time, we know that it's a matchup thing. There's really good matchups for Marquette, and there's really bad matchups. Villanova was long, athletic, and pressed. That was a bad matchup, similar to Louisville. Syracuse is long, somewhat athletic, but they don't press. They play that 2-3 shell. I think it actually favors Marquette, if not just... If it doesn't favor them, at least it's not a negative. It's not pressing against Marquette's worst tendencies. So I think Syracuse is a favorable matchup. Now it's just a question of whether Syracuse out-athletes them or out-efforts them, more so than, you know, coaching strategies.
Right. And I will say, you know, the home court advantage could play a factor. Fouls start going Marquette's way, like I said a minute ago. If we can get deep into Syracuse's bench, you know, keep Carter Williams on the bench. Even, you know, granted, that may mean we see more of Sutherland, which may not be a good thing. But, you know, if we get deep into their bench, get foul trouble, and can hit outside shots, yeah, that could be, you know, it could be a good thing for Marquette. And I will say this, you know, Marquette has actually done well recently in the don't let the door hit you on the way out games, because Marquette won at West Virginia last year when Buzz danced on the floor, and they swept. Greatest dance ever, and Marquette swept Pittsburgh this year.
That's true.
And so it makes me
really
optimistic for Louisville next
really
year.
If we want to rattle Jim Boeheim, we should probably have the student section have some sort of Andy Katz fathead or something.
Yeah, that would actually be the best idea for a big noggin. Although Andy Katz isn't exactly popular at Marquette himself. Mr. You know, Buzz Williams is going X here and there. But if we are going to have an Andy Katz big noggin, I think that would be the night to do it.
Well, that would be the only time you would do it, when it didn't involve him with a noose around his neck.
Exactly.
Not that I promote violence. This
no,
is
that
violence
we discourage those things. We discourage those things.
I'm not suggesting such things.
So, just to wrap up thoughts on the Syracuse game, my gut feeling is that Syracuse is going to have too much. They're a little too athletic. I just think, like I said, Marquette has really played poorly against some of the top teams, you know, in college basketball. Florida and Louisville, really, the way they played against those teams have me concerned. Granted, Syracuse is a little different than that. I still think Syracuse is a legit top 10 team, and I'm just not sure that Marquette is. The home court advantage is really going to have to swing Marquette's favor as far as Marquette shooting better, getting fouls in their favor, and not committing turnovers on their own.
Well, yeah, and I'm just slightly on the other side. I think they could win. I think they will win, but again, it's all going to be, you know, who outdoes their own thing. If Syracuse can do the Syracuse thing better than Marquette can do the Marquette thing, that's who's going to win.
Yeah, all right, we'll see what happens. Like I said, and also, like I said, one win changes everything. I know everyone's upset and frustrated and thinking, oh, we may lose out from here, but if you beat Syracuse, all of a sudden everyone plays the optimist again, and we're looking at ways to possibly win, still at least get a share of the Big East title before we get out of town. Speaking of getting out of town, I want to talk about the Big East and the Catholic Seven. Obviously, there was a new contract announced with the Big East with ESPN this past week. That really only affects Marquette and the rest of the Catholic Seven for 1 year, because at this point it looks like the Catholic Seven is going to be at least in the Big East for one more year before everyone gets out in 2014, because I think it's kind of getting late in the game to bail out, name a conference, get a commissioner, select sites, get schedules, invite new teams and stuff for next year.
Stupid paperwork.
All the red tape. But obviously the deal that the Big East got with ESPN, 7 years, $130 million, which is chump change compared to the $1.17 billion deal that was rejected before Pitt and Syracuse announced they were jumping ship.
Well, whoever rejected the $1.7 billion, they should be forced to put that on their resume for the rest of their life.
Well, didn't Pittsburgh play a big role in declining that?
Pittsburgh, I think Pittsburgh did that as a poison pill so they could get out of the Big East.
Right.
Yeah, because Pittsburgh had a huge role in saying no, but Pittsburgh has a habit of trying to screw up conference things. See the Big Ten when Penn State joined. They were hat in hand of trying to screw that up, too.
Right. Well, it's only going to be one more year, hopefully, in what I don't know what I want to call the Big East next year, whether it's the Bizarro Big East, the Potpourri Big East, you know, when all
Big
the riffraff moves.
USA?
Right, yes. when all the riffraff moves in next year with SMU, Memphis, Central Florida, and Houston, I'm only okay with it for 1 year if it means Marquette comes down here to Dallas-Fort Worth, where I live, and I get to see them play at SMU. I would be okay with that. Other than that, I think I am ready, as all Marquette fans are, to see this league, whatever it's going to be. It's not going to be called the Catholic number, whatever it is. I doubt it's even going to be a religious-based name. But whatever the new league is going to be called, I think everyone is excited to start it and see who's going to be in it and start inviting teams. About a week ago, I guess it was last weekend when that article came out, I think it was in the Washington Post, it kind of speculated on some of the teams that might be in and might be out. I don't have the article in front of me, but the two things that kind of jumped out about me about the article, one, it said it thinks Creighton is out because it's too far west, which puzzles me a little bit.
Interstate not made it to Nebraska?
I get, if you're on a plane and you're flying to Milwaukee and Chicago, is Omaha really that much worse if you're flying west? Before we dive into that article too much, you know, the assumption is that the Catholic Seven is going to invite 5 teams and go to 12. And so, Phil, if you were going to say, we'll talk travel and other issues aside here in a minute, but if all of that aside, in a vacuum, you could invite 5 schools into this new conference, who would be the first 5 on your list?
Well, the first two are the dead obvious ones, because by all accounts they're already invited, Xavier and Butler. I think Xavier gives us all the fun rivalry that Cincinnati did without all the thuggery.
And another Jesuit school, by the way.
And another Jesuit school. Butler private school, proven success, names out there, Brad Stevens,
It looks like Brett Stevens is going to be there for the foreseeable future until he gets an offer he can't refuse. Like, if, you know, I honestly don't see Brett Stevens leaving Butler until a school like Duke or UCLA or Kansas or Indiana is looking for a coach.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And so it regionally, Butler makes a ton of sense. So those are the obvious ones. I would have said Creighton. Apparently that's too far west. And if Creighton's too far west, my next one, Gonzaga, is way too far west. But I think Gonzaga makes a lot of sense. And then for the East Coast side, I think VCU. They've got an established name, put a lot of money into the program. Shaka Smart, a lot of good things to see out of those programs. So those were the 5 I would have.
Yeah, and like Smart, I almost feel the same way about him as I do about Stevens, is that I think he's going to be there until he gets the offer he can't refuse. While I think. Like, maybe there are some more schools that he would be open to going to. I think he's committed to VCU for a while, and I think he actually is going to be there for a few years. But my 5 are in this order. Again, in a vacuum, travel and arrangements and stuff aside, my number 1 is Butler, number 2 is Gonzaga, 3 for me would be Creighton, 4 would be Xavier, and 5 would be St. Louis for me. Just because, you know, St. Louis is a nice program, and it has, it's a huge market. You know, it gets us... Maybe St. Louis isn't the most popular school in St. Louis. Maybe it's more of a Missouri, Illinois town. But those are the 5 I would invite. Granted, now, like I said, we said a minute ago, maybe there are travel concerns with some of the non-revenue sports, which is why maybe Gonzaga isn't a lock yet, or maybe Gonzaga isn't in the mix. And, according to that Washington Post article, which I kind of disagree with, that they think Creighton is out. I wouldn't rule Creighton out until Creighton says they're out, but I guess the thing is we don't have a conference at the moment, so we're not exactly handing out invitations. It's all pure speculation at the moment. But that would be my 5. Butler, Gonzaga, Creighton, Xavier, and St. Louis. With apologies, next on what I like to call my waiting list would be Dayton, VCU, and Richmond. And Dayton and VCU are kind of interchangeable for me. I think they both kind of bring similar things to the table.
Well, yeah, but see, I'd much rather travel to VCU than Dayton. I used to live in Ohio and right down the road from Dayton, and the only thing that was exciting there was they had a spaghetti warehouse where there was a train car inside.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're looking for a mid-level spaghetti experience, Dayton would be good. I wouldn't hate it if Dayton was in the group. I wouldn't hate
I'd be
it
fine
if
with
Richmond
it.
Was in the group. I think you're kind of picking from pretty good choices. At the end of the day, it's going to be a very good conference. I think the must-haves, and I know it's a little different, but Xavier, Butler, and Creighton, I think, are the absolute must-haves.
I think Butler and Xavier are the must-haves. I think Creighton should be in there, in my opinion.
Well, but I think if you add Creighton, Xavier, and Butler, you could even stay at 10 teams. I think you need to go to 12.
Right.
I think just from a content standpoint, the number of games you have available to sell is better. But if you look at Creighton, I think they're number 6 in attendance in all of college basketball.
Right. Creighton, Omaha supports that team very, very well.
I mean, I'm living in Milwaukee. I shouldn't be bagging on other cities, but it's not like other than the College World Series, Omaha has a ton of sporting things going on.
Mm-hmm.
So Creighton's got a lot of interest. Creighton, Butler, and Xavier have strong non-basketball sports, the so-called Olympic sports. Creighton's really good in soccer. Marquette's got an up-and-coming soccer program. The Big East teams, the Catholic Seven teams leaving, have strong non-basketball sports. So it seems to make a good fit. I just want to see something come together soon because, you know, there's supposedly an offer out there from Fox Sports that would pay everyone $40 million a year. Well, let's get that thing in. Whatever it takes to win that offer, let's...
You mean the group, not per school, obviously. Per school...
per school, $40 million per school, which is considerably more than Marquette's getting in the existing Big East contract. So why we wouldn't make every effort to just get this deal done and get 3 to 5 teams signed on the dotted line, I don't know.
Right. You know, that Washington Post article, some other teams that speculated about in the article were Detroit and Siena. My problem with that is, the article almost seemed to suggest that we're out to create a Catholic basketball conference, and that's why Siena and Detroit were in the mix. Obviously, that's not what's going on. The goal is to have the strongest basketball conference possible, which is why, obviously, you know, they said, well, they'll probably make an exception for Butler. Obviously, we're making an exception for Butler. They're the first one we're inviting.
Right.
You know, we'll have the conference tournament in Indianapolis if we have to.
Well, I have a real issue with – well, and we'll touch back on that conference championship because that's something I want to bring up about this new conference. But I have an issue with that Washington Post article because, like you said, they were insinuating we're making this a Catholic conference. And all you have to do is look at about, 30 different articles where just about every university president explicitly stated this is not a religiously affiliated conference.
Right, they're
just going out of their way to say that.
Yeah, it's 7 schools that happen to be Catholic that just have good basketball programs.
Right,
and DePaul,
the Catholicism of the schools had nothing to do with this split. It had to do with the fact that none of them have football.
Right.
So I think that's just lazy journalism.
Yeah, and I think the waiting list, like as I like to call it, is very long before you get down to Detroit and Siena.
Oh, right.
And I think before, like, I don't think it even comes to this, but before you get that far, I think you're talking to maybe UMass or Charlotte. I know Villanova wouldn't want St. Joe's or LaSalle in there because they got too many Philadelphia schools. I think if it gets down to Siena and Detroit, you consider going farther west to get St. Mary's, maybe, to pair up with Gonzaga. I think there are so many options you would consider before you think of bringing in, you know, teams from one-bid leagues.
Well, and Siena especially. I mean, Detroit, you can make an argument. They had a brief moment when Dickie V was there. But Siena, okay, yeah, they get an automatic bid just about every year. And they've won one or two games in the tournament, but that's one of those head scratchers that people just go, the casual fan goes, who? And,
right.
And just it just doesn't generate any interest in the league.
That's, right. That's, and like you said, if it gets to the point where you're considering Detroit or Siena, I think, like you said a minute ago, you would consider staying at 10. Because if you have a 10-team league, then you have, you know, 9 opponents, and you can go home and home with everybody, and you have an 18-game schedule.
Right. Well, and what's ultimately going to drive this, the 10 or 12... Because there's even been some reports in the local, in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about the league wanting to stay at 10. The general consensus is wanting to stay at 10, but the Fox Sports is the main bidder wanting to go to 12. And that's really about how many games the league produces. I think the math would be if it's a 10-team league, it's about 150 games. If it's a 12-game league, it's 196 games. So I think the conference itself would rather have those 9 home and homes, but, you know, whoever's got the media rights wants more games because this is going to be the only thing they have from a content standpoint.
Right, and I'm fine with that. I don't think you're diluting the league at all by adding Dayton or VCU and Richmond. I mean,
we've already got
DePaul and, you know, Seton Hall at the bottom there, so I don't think you're really hurting the league by adding those teams. I you know, the more teams that are NCAA tournament quality you have, I'm fine with, as long as you're not getting crazy and adding 18 teams, because then I think you're getting ridiculous again. But I think 12 is fine with me, as
right.
long
and,
as...
And I think the measuring stick, honestly, for me is, you know, there's two. It's two parts. One, have they had proven success in college basketball? And two, are they showing the financial investment to maintain a high-caliber basketball team? You know, and that's why I say, that's why I pick, say, VCU over a St. Louis, is VCU has poured a ton of money into that program. They put a lot of money into Shaka Smart, and it looks like he's going to stay. St. Louis, unfortunately, you know, our Marquette's good friend Rick Majerus unfortunately left there permanently, so they're in a bit of flux. St. Louis is kind of one of those teams that, you know, it's kind of, they're there, but how much are they really investing in it? You know, but that's right. That's really the two criteria. What are they?
Yeah, and I would say St. Louis. I would look at them as a program where if they are in a good conference, I think they could grow and continue to be better. Because, I mean, they're actually pretty strong this year. I mean, they beat Butler on the road this past week. And, you know, even Brad Stevens says he looks at, like, St. Louis has Final Four talent. Now, maybe that may be a bit of a stretch, just a coach just complimenting his opponent and all. And, you know, we're not going to base this off 1 year of basketball. But I think St. Louis, if they were in the league, would do very well, because I think the exposure they would get in recruiting I think St. Louis would have a competitive program. I don't think they would be at the bottom of the new league routinely.
No, that's what DePaul's for.
That is what DePaul's for. That's why DePaul would love to see Detroit and Siena joining the party. Let's see. Anything else? Oh, you wanted to go back to the Catholic Seven and the conference tournament thing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I really wanted to address, I mean, with the breakaway from the Big East, if you look at this from a business perspective, you've got there's a couple of key assets with the Big East split that, which may be part of what's driving the delay in getting this deal done, is figuring out what assets are going where. And there are three big assets, and I'll list them in order of priority for me: the conference tournament at MSG, the money left over from the exit fees of Syracuse, Pitt, West Virginia, and then the Big East name. I think it's absolutely critical. I mean, we can joke around Indianapolis as hosting the tourney. I've been there. It's not a terrible city.
Yes, I was being facetious with that comment, by the way.
What's that?
I was being facetious with that comment,
okay,
by the way.
Okay, good. Because this was going to get an ugly podcast. I mean, they got a decent setup, but it's not New York City.
Nope.
You know, that's kind of the glittering jewel. I think we absolutely have to have MSG as the focus point for the conference tournament, because then it also means when we go to media day, we're likely in New York City for that. It's a quick drive from the Evil Empire in Bristol. I think it's just a critical thing for the new conference to take with it. I would absolutely give up the Big East name at this point.
Easily.
At first I was a bit advocate for keeping it. It was a recognized brand. But I actually think it's kind of been dragged through the mud lately, and it's just not that big a deal anymore. You can easily come up with a new name around the new conference, and then the other part is you do want to take some of that exit money. We're going to need a war chest to kind of get this conference up and running.
Right.
But the MSG is critical to me.
I agree. I think it's important for this new league to have a great stage to showcase what it's about and all the new talent, or, you know, the teams that are going to be in it. And I would think MSG would be more interested in the new league that Marquette's going to be in as opposed to the old Big East, because really all you're getting in that new league effective the 2014-15 season, you'll have Connecticut and Cincinnati and blah. You know,
and that's all assuming that the ACC hasn't exploded, and Connecticut and UConn have gotten their wish to go to the ACC.
Right. I think like MSG might be interested in trying to get the ACC tournament and getting Syracuse, and like if UConn goes down there, and getting Duke and Carolina to go up there. I'm not sure that would happen. But if it's between the Catholic Sevens new league and the hodgepodge Big East, I think MSG would have more interest in that, have some interest in bringing in, you know, the local schools, you know, Seton Hall and St. John's, in addition to Georgetown, who's been there for many, many years with the Big East, and bringing in, you know, Marquette and hopefully Butler and, you know, whoever else is going to be in this new league.
Well, and you look at the fan bases of the new teams. If you get Creighton, a Butler, and a Xavier, I think it's, you know, it's been proven that those are good fan bases, and they'll travel. So the New York City would want those tourism dollars, and MSG wants butts and seats.
To be a devil's advocate, you know, a lot of those schools do have small alumni bases. So, you know, if it's between them and, say, the ACC, obviously they would look at the ACC more. But, you know, if the ACC is absolutely, you know, hell-bent on staying in North Carolina, which is just fine with me, you guys can just stay down there in Charlotte and Greenville or wherever you guys want to play it. And I think, you know, they are small alumni bases for places like Marquette and Butler and Creighton. But I think we would certainly have more appeal than, say, you know, Houston and SMU and, you know, Memphis, UCF, South Florida.
Oh, I agree. And I really think what at worst-case scenario is if the ACC has any interest in going to MSG, I think it's going to be on a partial basis. I can't imagine Duke and North Carolina being willing to move permanently away from Tobacco Road.
Right.
So I could see a split where it's maybe every third year or every other year, and then maybe we take the off years or the off...
We go to the Barclays Center.
Yeah, go to the Barclays. I would love to start at the Barclays Center, too. That would be great. Or, you know, maybe we do 2 years at MSG and 1 year in Indianapolis, if that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Maybe Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago.
Oh, and the Big Ten has Chicago. Big Ten has Chicago.
Yeah, I think you just, you got to put it in a big city for sure, at least 2 out of 3 years to really drive the image as big city basketball and just drive it home.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. Like I said, I'm anxious to this. Like, I just want the TV deal to be announced, because I think once the television deal is announced, or, you know, thing is, I don't know who is even working on it, because we don't have a commissioner right now. I think that's probably the first step I think they should take, is just name a commissioner. Just put one guy who is in charge of this whole thing, you know, somebody who is well respected and well trusted. I don't even know a name to throw out. The only thing I'm throwing out is Dan Beebe, and it's just because it's a joke on Twitter.
Well, but, He would be great. The one thing the Journal Sentinel floated was the name of, and I'm going to butcher his last name because I can't even pronounce most people's name, Jamie Zanavic, who's the current commissioner of the West Coast Conference, as a possible choice to lead the new league. That was the local name. I don't know anything about him, the West Coast
Conference. I don't
Conference.
Either. That's a name that's new to me.
Yeah. They seem fine. Gonzaga's in the West Coast Conference, right?
Right. Yeah, bring him and bring Gonzaga with you.
Yeah, you know, maybe...
By the way, speaking of travel, when I was just naming Big East teams a minute ago, have people been real thrilled about sending their non-revenue sports to South Florida over the last few years? So if that's like a big deal, is Creighton really a big deal?
Well, so we invited Tulane. That's going to be, you know, less expensive than going to Creighton. So
Sorry, I got off topic there.
I think
there,
it's a negotiating tactic. I think it's one of these things where you've kind of got the East Coast, West... or let me rephrase, East Coast, Midwest teams. So you got the DePauls, Marquettes. They want some Midwest partners in Georgetown, Seton Hall. St. John's wants some East Coast partners like Richmond or VCU.
Sure.
So I think it'll all come out in the wash. I think it's kind of a little bit of negotiating through the media. But I feel pretty confident that Creighton will probably get invited. They're not doing themselves any favors. They haven't played as well the last couple of weeks, but...
Like I said, you're not really basing it too much on how teams play this season so much. You're looking at long-term potential, and obviously the long-term potential for Creighton is clearly there. Even if they bottom out this season and don't make the tournament, long-term potential is absolutely there for Creighton if they're a part of this league.
Agree.
You're right. So I think the important thing, I want to see a commissioner for this league, whoever it is. Like I said, I don't even know many names besides the guy you just threw out. And then I want the new commissioner to, you know, let's hammer out the television deal. And once the television deal is done, then I think we start putting down an exact date when these teams are leaving, when the new league is formed, and then they can start handing out invitations, because there's no guarantee. I don't know what the contract status is with schools like Butler and Gonzaga and Creighton, and how soon they could get out of their current leagues and join it.
Right. That, I mean, you've got to get this, the number of moving pieces. I mean, theoretically, it's literally 12 moving pieces here. You've got the core seven, and then you've got 3 to 5 other teams that have to join up. We need to do this all at once, uniformly, get the TV contract in place. That's going to drive everything.
Right.
Because there's a lot of details to be worked out around the TV contract, because it's my understanding, like the Fox Sports offer, it's all media rights. So, like, even like Marquette with their radio shows, the Bud Williams show, which I think is sponsored by Nelligan Sports, who gets the advertising revenue for that. Would that be included in that contract? So now you've got to start to sever some of those contracts to drive that revenue to the Fox Sports agreement. There's a lot of details here to be worked out, and the sooner, you know, I would think by this spring, I'm going to say April, May time frame, we have to have something solid in place, not just media rumors. Otherwise, I think we get to start to get a lot of nervous people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe that's something we look at Final Four weekend when all, you know, a lot of school presidents and, commissioners or whoever, you know, a lot of people in college basketball are all in the same place at the same time. And I think that weekend, maybe people really start talking. And then hopefully by mid-April, late April, or sometimes early May, something will at least, the ball will get rolling on this thing, and hopefully we'll figure out where we're going to be playing in 2014.
Yeah, and I have to think that there's been secret invitations, you know, a lot of wink wink. Theoretically, if someone were to invite you into a league, would you say yes? Kind of conversations going on. So I'm sure there's more going on in the background, but we need something above ground here in the next couple of months. But I agree, the Final Four weekend's probably what I'll hold my breath for.
Yeah, so I'll be anxious to see what happens. Anxious to see what happens this week. That's just going to about wrap it up for Scrambled Eggs this week. Obviously, coming up Syracuse, and then we'll have Notre Dame the week after that. One last note on that quick Notre Dame game, which is senior night, by the way. We'll talk seniors next week. Do we know if Chris Otule is coming out for senior night? Is he going? Because obviously, there's a question if he's going to come back for a 6-year. And I'm curious if he will have a ceremony on senior night.
Yeah, I've heard nothing. I've asked a few folks if they've heard anything. It's kind of been mum. I would think he would do something because it's not a guaranteed, but, I mean, that'll tell us if he doesn't have something on senior night. I would think that tells us he's back next year for sure.
Right.
So that'll be interesting to see, and, you know, I'm looking forward to it because then otherwise it's just junior.
And Lockett.
Oh, and Lockett. Yep, you're right. And Lockett. I kind of forget that he's a senior since I've been here this year.
Just 1 year,
but,
right.
But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I haven't seen anything official. I would think Marquette would have to push something out here in the next day or two. Maybe they'll wait till after the Syracuse game to announce that.
Yep, well, I will be anxious to see what happens at senior night and, of course, on Monday night. Any final thoughts on the Syracuse game or any other thing, Phil?
No, just looking forward to get back and getting back to the winning ways. Syracuse is going to be a heck of a game, and I look forward to more feedback on this podcast. We were extremely well received the first time out of the shoot, probably better received than ought to be. Loving this podcast and going to continue to do it. So thanks for Joe, for you, and everybody listening.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who tuned in last week. We got a lot of hits on some good feedback, and welcome more feedback. Again, we're on Twitter. You can hit me up at JoeMccann3. That's Joe, MCCANN3 on Twitter. And Phil is Moof23. That's MOOOF23. Feedback, opinions, war stories, all welcome on Twitter. That's going to do it for Scrambled Eggs this week. Enjoy the Marquette games, everyone, and hope your week is seashells and balloons.